episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. This is episode number 28, and I'm your host, DJ Chuang, and this is being recorded on the go as I'm en route to a gigantic missions conference called Urbana that happens only every 3 years, and this time it is being held in St. Louis after moving from its original location, which was Urbana. And I flew out of LAX really early this morning and have an hour or so layover in Chicago O'Hare, and then I'll be hopping on a plane to St. Louis and be there all week. I'm actually the official live blogger for the Urbana 12 conference, and hope to connect with many people there. And if you're a listener to the Social Media Church Podcast, we'd love to meet you in person as well. They're expecting an audience of about 18,000 people, and I wanted to keep on pace with the schedule here at the Social Media Church Podcast as a weekly podcast, and today's episode will be a shorter one. I'm going to keep my comments short on the intro and really short on the outro. And this is a conversation I had regarding digital publishing, kind of the new world of publishing that's available to us now in the 21st century. And personally, I'm reading a book that just came out from Guy Kawasaki, co-authored with a developer, I believe his name is Ryan Walsh. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just talking off the top of my head. And the title of that book is APE, standing for Author, Publisher, and Entrepreneur. And just how digital publishing has opened up a whole new world for hundreds and thousands of people, including the conversation I'll be having with my featured guest on this episode, Scott Asai, who published a book titled Startup Church. And you might be surprised, as I was, because the book is not about launching a startup church or how to do church planting. But rather, it is a proposal and a solution for a new kind of church that will reach the next generation in a way that the church as we have known it will not. So my conversation does touch on social media as well as his experience in digital publishing and just how fast it was for him. And if it was that fast for him in terms of how quickly he put together his manuscript and clicked upload and when it was available for sale, that same opportunity is available to you if you have an idea that you want to share with the world and to make a little money on the side of it without the 12 to 18 month lag time it takes for traditional publishing. And traditional publishing has its place, but now there's a whole new playing field for those of us who are aspiring authors or have a book idea that may not hit mainstream audiences, but still a sizable enough audience, whatever that may be, just as the same with podcasting, that anyone could start something to reach a micro-niche audience, kind of like we're doing here at the Social Media Church. Connect with us at socialmediachurch.net. That's our website, and you can click through to our buttons for links to Twitter and Facebook. I'd really love to hear from you as we are here on episode number 28. We've been at this for just over half a year. Would love to hear your feedback, what you've learned and found most valuable so far, and that will inform my programming into the new year, 2013. So you can tweet me or Facebook me, email me at me@socialmediachurch.net. That's my email address. And you can even call in your comment. I find it easier to talk sometimes than to actually write an email. And you can call our listener line at 9493-543-216. Now let me turn it over to my conversation with Scott Asai, the author of Startup Church.
All right, Scott Asai, tell us about how you got into writing the Startup Church.
Sure. Until maybe July, it wasn't really even a blip on my radar. I really never had a desire to write a book. I thought maybe, you know, it would be nice, maybe one of those five-year goals, but I'd say come late July, I felt pretty strongly about writing kind of a story about my last maybe 10 or 15 years career-wise. And I'm a former youth pastor, and then I went and I totally went a different way and became an entrepreneur. And so I was able to sort of look at the church from both as an employee and also as an attendee. And so I tried to sort of mesh my experience with my own faith and also my experience with business. And I looked at it from the perspective of maybe someone who has either been turned off by church or maybe someone who's just kind of on the outside looking in. And so the book itself is actually almost like a letter from someone from the outside in that millennial age group speaking to a pastor or a church leader.
That's fantastic. That's a great perspective to have. And so would you say you're a 20 or 30-something and you're writing as one of them?
You know, I'm a 30-something. I'm probably right outside that millennial age group. But as a youth pastor, and I have brothers actually who are in their 20s right now, I've always worked with that age group for the last 10 or 15 years. So even though I'm a little outside that age category, I feel like I can relate to them. So it's written more so to represent them, and it's definitely an age group that the church has had problems with engaging for a long time. And so my thought is, instead of complain about it and state the obvious, why not create a book and use it as a blueprint for creating some solutions?
So as a blueprint, this is something that you're proposing as a possible way to engage them, or this is telling a story of how a new church started, kind of like how Willow Creek has a book about reaching unchurched Harry and Mary, and Mark the book about his church planting journey. What is the start of church about?
It's not really a church planting book. I mean, I guess you could use it for that. I think I look at it more as, and I use the term faith community versus church in the book, because my model is a little bit based more on trying to serve the needs of the community. So there's a lot of churches who do a great job with global missions, and I think that's great. But I think that a very small percentage of people who are in the church actually go or are able to go on a missions trip, maybe across the globe. But all of us are have the ability to help out with our time and our energy with helping out in the community. And so I think that our church and our community, we are placed strategically, you know, location-wise, where we live, hopefully, if we go to a local church. And really, I feel like it's our job to help turn this in ways the economy around by helping our local communities. So I think the startup church is really more of a community-based, almost like an accelerator, I guess, in business terms. My thoughts are figuring out what the community, what the needs of the community are, and being able to go in there and create really almost like a local resource that becomes almost like a center or a social hub that attracts people who want to get involved, even if they're not at that point where spirituality is maybe at the top of their list. But I feel like a lot of times the church is looked at as, well, it's a great place to go if you're already someone who believes in God, but it's not necessarily the easiest place to enter if you don't already have an established faith.
Also, this is not related to startupchurch.com, which is about church planting. It's more of a community of Christ followers who think like a startup and really want to engage the community.
Yeah, no, it's not related to that. Although I do have the domain name, thestartupchurch.com, but that's mainly just forwarding people to my Facebook page, which there's more of a discussion going on there. So really the goal of the book is not, I mean, it'd be great to get a bunch of book sales, and don't get me wrong, that'd be wonderful. But really the goal is to be able to see this become a blueprint and make an impact in the community that whoever picks up the book, and quite frankly, it could be pastors and church leaders, but it also could be just people who are skeptics or seeking, and they're looking for something to be a part of. I think everyone wants to belong and be a part of a group. And I think that sometimes the church is looked upon as something that maybe in a community, but it's not the most inviting place. So if we can create maybe a more of a positive image for people to look at the church as, then I think it'd be a little bit more appealing. And that's pretty much what my book lays out. It lays out several ways to really engage and really almost rebuild what the local church looks like.
All right, very good. It's a different way of being the church then. And so since we're here on the Social Media Church podcast, we want to explore and learn, well, how does social media play a part in being a startup kind of church?
I think it's free marketing, you know, and it's I think with this generation, this millennial generation, they're the most tech-savvy, entrepreneurial-driven, collaborative group that's honestly in history. So I think if you, as a church, are not using social media, you're kind of ignoring that group that is really in that space. So social media isn't a substitute for real relationships, face-to-face relationships, but I think it can be a conduit for it. And sometimes you can reach an audience that you may never physically meet, but yet you can still serve the needs of people, I think, in that way. And the way I look at social media is it isn't an online conversation. And if you can bring it offline, great. But if you're communicating with maybe someone across the globe and you'll maybe never meet face-to-face, it still is a very viable way to start a relationship.
So let's unpack that a bit more. Describe how you are using social media as part of the faith community that you're currently part of.
Sure. I think for me right now, I'm using it more for the book. I think in the future, I would use it a little bit more. My dad's actually in the process of probably planning a church next year, and so I'm going to be pretty involved with that. And we've already talked about blogging and, you know, Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn, those type of things to use. But for right now, I think I've used it as a way to sort of get my thoughts and ideas out there and hopefully link up with other people who believe maybe a similar thought process. I actually had a conversation with a guy yesterday who lived in the Midwest, and he found me, I think, on Twitter. And we had a phone call, and he asked if I wanted to do maybe some consulting work with him. And quite frankly, if I wasn't even on, you know, social media or Twitter in particular, then I would have never connected with him. So I think there's a lot of opportunities that are out there, and I think social media can bring those to you. And so I think it's wise to explore and not shut down any open doors that might be there.
Yeah, that's kind of where things are for a majority of people. They hear a lot about social media through traditional media, and there's a lot of stories circulating about the popularity of Facebook and Twitter, and I think there's a majority of people that are still watching and waiting and not sure how it really fits organizational goals or business goals, and so having real-life examples is certainly helpful as you launch this book, how you're tactically using social media as a coach, how you're incorporating that into cultivating your business and developing your platform. Those would be great to hear more about.
Do
you incorporate social media as part of your – well, I'm looking at your Facebook profile here.
Yeah.
Performance coaching and leadership coaching?
Yeah, no, I do. I think, you know, before, like I said, the book was even a reality, I was primarily using – I think I started really blogging, and this is something I started doing maybe like 5, maybe 6 years ago. And I have to admit I didn't enjoy writing at the time. I don't feel like, you know, that's one of my particular strengths. But I will say, though, that by blogging, I've definitely grown my audience. I feel like I've kind of honed in on what my voice is and created my own writing style. And now I enjoy it. I'm able to sort of do these weekly blogs, sometimes guest posts too, where I'm able to sort of share what I'm learning. And I feel like where blogging is going, it's sort of, not only does it help you, you know, show up higher on search engines and things like that and so people can find you, but I think it's also a way to show people that you're active, that you're doing something. And I think for other companies or potential clients or people who want to collaborate with you, it's almost like a live resume. And I like to look at it as, okay, well, that's great that you've done this 5 years ago, but what have you done this past month or what have you done this past week? And I think a blog is a perfect way to share with people sort of what your thoughts are, because everyone's entitled to their opinion, and some people will agree, some people will disagree, but I think it's wise to be able to share with people sort of what's on your wavelength right now.
Good. And have you, so in addition to blogging, how do you incorporate other social media, or how do you choose which ones to incorporate, whether that's Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, LinkedIn, Pinterest? There's so many, right?
I know. I like LinkedIn the most, and then Twitter and Facebook. I've used Tumblr a little bit. I don't use Pinterest, just mainly because I don't know that much about it. But the reason I like LinkedIn the most, I think it's the most focused. I feel like if I'm going to spend my time on one particular social media engine, I want it to be something that represents me professionally. And so I actually am more comfortable pointing people to my LinkedIn site than my blog, because I feel like my LinkedIn sort of is a good overall scope of what I've been doing for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And it also, it's easy to connect with people. And when you connect with them, there's a reason to connect with them. Whereas I feel like Facebook it's fun. And, you know, I have a Facebook page for both my book and also my business. And I have a personal page, of course, too. But it's a little bit more social. And I think Twitter is sort of the hybrid of the two. It's sort of the in-betweener. It's a little bit of personal, a little bit of professional. I have to say, I don't feel like I've fully maximized, you know, the power of any of them, but I do try to stay active, and I do definitely try to build my connections and stay up to date on what's going on. So, no, I definitely see a lot of value in it.
Excellent. Now, the book is launching or has launched. It's in print format. What do you think of ebooks?
I have it on Kindle, too. It launched actually yesterday, the 26th, so it's on both. I'm not opposed to an ebook by any means. That's why I decided to put it on both platforms. But I think it's kind of, maybe call me old school, but it's kind of nice to have sort of this tangible product in your hands. And one of my goals is to be able to speak a lot and be able to sell my book or promote it there, too. So I've had some people already buy the ebook, so I'm fine with that. I don't necessarily read books on a Kindle or an iPad. I prefer actually to read them in my hand. Maybe they'll change in the next year or so, but that's just a personal preference.
That's right. That's one of the things that we all have to navigate is realizing different people have different preferences and meeting them where they are, whether that's print or digital or mobile or tablet or email.
Yeah. Actually, I think one, you bring up a good point. When it comes to sort of when I started writing the book, one of my friends who had written a book right before me mentioned that the best advice that he got as an author was to make sure that you, you know, sort of hone in your voice, but also figure out what the audience you're trying to reach. And so for me, the book's primary audience definitely is church leaders and pastors, but my secondary audience is actually millennials, and I would use the term disgruntled millennials. And the reason why is because there's people who I believe love God, but they're a little bit turned off by the church. So I feel like the two audiences are different, and maybe the pastors and church leaders would prefer a tangible, you know, hold in your hand book. And maybe the younger audience would prefer to have it on their iPad or Kindle. So it's also just kind of being aware of, you know, generationally what's different and trying to make it available because people want it a certain way.
Any closing thoughts for our listeners as we're learning together about using social media as part of the church?
I think it's the way of the future. I actually feel like if you're a church and you're not using social media, then you're really behind the curve. And I think that, unfortunately, that pours into the stereotype of the church in general, which tends to be a little bit prehistoric.
Well, very good. Spoken like a professional coach. Doing what is effective. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Social Media Church podcast. Scott Asai, the author of The Start of Church, Reaching Millennials Where Faith Meets Business. We'll add a link to the show notes and add a comment, and Scott will respond with some of his thoughts and experiences. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, Scott, for calling in to the Social Media Church podcast. Great chatting with you. Again, check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net for a link to his new book, and stay connected with us. Until next time, we'll see you in the new year, 2013. Thank you for being a faithful listener to the Social Media Church, and I'd love to hear from you about what you're learning, how you're using social media in your church, and what you'd like to hear, and perhaps a guest introduction of someone you'd like to have a conversation with or listen in on a conversation with here on the Social Media Church. Let me know. Socialmediachurch.net is the place to connect. And until next year, we'll stay connected with you online.